statesmen, persons of the dialogue, Theodorus, the elitic stranger, Socrates, the younger Socrates.
I owe you many thanks, indeed, Theodorus, for the acquaintance both of Theaetetus and of the stranger.
And in little while, Socrates, you will owe me three times as many when they have completed for you the delineation of the statesman and of the philosopher, as well as of the sophist.
Sophist, statesman, philosopher, O my dear Theodorus, do my ears truly witness that this is the estimate formed of them by the great calculator and geometrician?
What do you mean, Socrates?
I mean that you rate them all at the same value, whereas they are really separated by an interval which no geometrical ratio can express.
By Ammon, the god of Cyrene, Socrates, that is a very fair hit, and shows that you have not forgotten your geometry. I will retaliate on you at some other time, but I must now ask the stranger, who will not, I hope, tire of his goodness to us, to proceed either with the statesman or with the philosopher, whichever he prefers.
That is my duty, Theodorus. Having begun, I must go on, and not leave the work unfinished. But what shall be done with Theaetetus?
In what respect?
Shall we relieve him, and take his companion, the young Socrates, instead of him? What do you advise?
Yes, give the other a turn, as you propose. The young always do better when they have intervals of rest.
I think, stranger, that both of them may be said to be in some way related to me, for the one, as you affirm, has the cut of my ugly face, the other is called by my name, and we should always be on the lookout to recognize a kinsman by the style of his conversation. I myself was discoursing with Theaetetus yesterday, and I have just been listening to his answers. My namesake I have not yet examined, but I must. Another time will do for me. Today let him answer you.
Very good, young Socrates. Do you hear what the elder Socrates is proposing?
I do.
And you agree to his proposal?
Certainly.
As you do not object, still less can I. After the sophist, then, I think that the statesman naturally follows next in the order of inquiry, and please to say whether he, too, should be ranked among those who have science.
Yes.
Then the sciences must be divided as before.
I dare say.
But yet the division will not be the same.
How then?
They will be divided at some other point.
Yes.
Where shall we discover the path of the statesman? We must find, and separate off, and set our seal upon this, and we will set the mark of another glass upon all diverging paths. Thus the soul will conceive of all kinds of knowledge under two classes.
To find the path is your business, stranger, and not mine.
Yes, Socrates, but the discovery, when once made, must be yours as well as mine.
Very good.
Well, and are not arithmetic and certain other kindred arts merely abstract knowledge, wholly separated from action?
True.
But in the art of carpentering and all other handicrafts, the knowledge of the workman is merged in his work. He not only knows, but he also makes things which previously did not exist.
Certainly.
Then let us divide sciences in general into those which are practical, and those which are purely intellectual.
Let us assume these two divisions of science, which is one whole.
And are statesmen, king, master, or householder, one and the same? Or is there a science or art answering to each of these names? Or rather, allow me to put the matter in another way.
Let me hear.
If anyone who is in a private station has the skill to advise one of the public physicians, must not he also be called a physician?
Yes.
And if anyone who is in a private station is able to advise the ruler of a country, may not he be said to have the knowledge which the ruler himself ought to have?
True.
But surely the science of a true king is royal science.
Yes.
And will not he who possesses this knowledge, whether he happens to be a ruler or a private man, when regarded only in reference to his art, be truly called royal?
He certainly ought to be.
And the householder and master are the same?
Of course.
Again, a large household may be compared to a small state. Will they differ at all, as far as government is concerned?
They will not.
Then, returning to the point which we were just now discussing, do we not clearly see that there is one science of all of them, and this science may be called either royal or political or economical? We will not quarrel with anyone about the name.
Certainly not.
This, too, is evident, that the king cannot do much with his hands, or with his whole body, towards the maintenance of his empire, compared with what he does by the intelligence and strength of his mind.
Clearly not.
Then, shall we say, that the king has a greater affinity to knowledge than to manual arts, and to practical life in general?
Certainly he has.
Then we may put all together, as one and the same, statesmanship and the statesman, the kingly science and the king.
Clearly.
And now we shall only be proceeding in due order, if we go on to divide the sphere of knowledge.
Very good.
Think, whether you can find any joint or parting in knowledge.
Tell me of what sort.
such as this. You may remember that we made an art of calculation.
Yes.
Which was, unmistakably, one of the arts of knowledge.
Certainly.
And to this art of calculation which discerns the differences of numbers shall we assign any other function except to pass judgment on their differences.
How could we?
You know, that the master builder does not work himself, but is the ruler of workmen.
Yes.
He contributes knowledge, not manual labor.
True.
And may therefore be justly said to share in theoretical science.
Quite true.
But he ought not, like the calculator, to regard his functions as at an end. When he has formed a judgment, he must assign to the individual workmen their appropriate task until they have completed the work.
True.
Are not all such sciences, no less than arithmetic and the like, subjects of pure knowledge, and is not the difference between the two classes that the one sort has the power of judging only, and the other of ruling as well?
That is evident.
May we not very properly say that of all knowledge there are two divisions, one which rules, and the other which judges?
I should think so.
And when men have anything to do in common, that they should be of one mind is surely a desirable thing.
Very true.
Then while we are at unity among ourselves, we need not mind about the fancies of others.
Certainly not.
And now, in which of these divisions shall we place the king? Is he a judge, and a kind of spectator, or shall we assign to him the art of command, for he is a ruler?
The latter. Clearly.
Then we must see whether there is any mark of division in the art of command too. I am inclined to think that there is a distinction similar to that of manufacturer and retail dealer, which parts off the king from the herald.
How is this?
Why, does not the retailer receive and sell over again the productions of others, which have been sold before?
Certainly he does.
And is not the herald under command, and does he not receive orders, and in his turn give them to others?
Very true.
Then shall we mingle the kingly art in the same class with the art of the herald, the interpreter, the boatswain, the prophet, and the numerous kindred arts which exercise command, or, as in the preceding comparison we spoke of manufacturers, or sellers, for themselves, and of retailers, seeing, too, that the class of supreme rulers, or rulers, for themselves, is almost nameless, shall we make a word following the same analogy, and refer kings to a supreme or ruling for self-science, leaving the rest to receive a name from someone else, for we are seeking the ruler, and our inquiry is not concerned with him, who is not a ruler.
Very good.
Thus a very fair distinction has been attained between the man who gives his own commands, and him who gives another's. And now let us see if the supreme power allows of any further division.
By all means.
I think that it does, and please to assist me in making the division.
At what point?
May not all rulers be supposed to command for the sake of producing something?
Certainly.
Nor is there any difficulty in dividing the things produced into two classes.
How would you divide them?
Of the whole class, some have life and some are without life.
True.
And by the help of this distinction we may make, if we please, a subdivision of the section of knowledge which commands.
At what point?
One part may be set over the production of lifeless, the other of living objects, and in this way the whole will be divided.
Certainly.
That division, then, is complete, and now we may leave one half and take up the other, which may also be divided into two.
Which of the two halves do you mean?
Of course that which exercises command about animals, for, surely, the royal science is not like that of a master workman, a science presiding over lifeless objects. The king has a nobler function, which is the management and control of living beings.
True.
And the breeding and tending of living beings may be observed to be sometimes a tending of the individual. In other cases, a common care of creatures and flocks.
True.
But the statesman is not a tender of individuals, not like the driver or groom of a single ox or horse. He is rather to be compared with the keeper of a drove of horses or oxen.
Yes, I see, thanks to you.
Shall we call this art of tending many animals together the art of managing a herd, or the art of collective management?
No matter, whichever suggests itself to us in the course of conversation.
Very good, Socrates, and if you continue to be not too particular about names, you will be all the richer in wisdom when you are an old man. And now, as you say, leaving the discussion of the name, can you see a way in which a person, by showing the art of herding to be of two kinds, may cause that which is now sought amongst twice the number of things to be then sought amongst half that number?
I will try. There appears to me to be one management of men and another of beasts.
You have certainly divided them in a most straightforward and manly style, but you have fallen into an error which hereafter I think that we had better avoid.
What is the error?
I think that we had better not cut off a single small portion which is not a species from many larger portions. The part should be a species, two separate or fat ones. The subject of investigation is a most excellent plan, if only the separation be rightly made and you were under the impression that you were right, because you saw that you would come to man, and this led you to hasten the steps, but you should not chip off too small a piece, my friend. The safer way is to cut through the middle, which is also the more likely way of finding glasses. Attention to this principle makes all the difference in a process of inquiry.
What do you mean, stranger?
I will endeavor to speak more plainly out of love to your good parts, Socrates, and although I cannot at present entirely explain myself, I will try, as we proceed, to make my meaning a little clearer.
What was the error of which, as you say, we were guilty in our recent division?
The error was just as if someone who wanted to divide the human race were to divide them after the fashion which prevails in this part of the world. Here they cut off the Hellenes as one species, and all the other species of mankind, which are innumerable, and have no ties or common language, they include under the single name of barbarians, and because they have one name they are supposed to be of one species also. Or suppose that in dividing numbers you were to cut off 10,000 from all the rest, and make of it one species, comprehending the rest under another separate name. You might say that here too was a single class, because you have given it a single name, whereas you would make a much better and more equal and logical classification of numbers if you divided them into odd and even, or of the human species, if you divided them into male and female, and only separated off Lydian or Phrygians, or any other tribe, and arrayed them against the rest of the world, when you could no longer make a division into parts which were also classes.
Very true, but I wish that this distinction between a part and a class could still be made somewhat plainer.
O Socrates, best of men, you are imposing upon me a very difficult task. We have already digressed further from our original intention than we ought, and you would have us wander still further away. But we must now return to our subject, and hereafter, when there is a leisure hour, we will follow up the other track. At the same time, I wish you to guard against imagining that you ever heard me declare...
What?
...that a class and a part are distinct.
What did I hear, then?
That a class is necessarily a part, but there is no similar necessity that a part should be a class. That is the view which I should always wish you to attribute to me, Socrates.
So be it.
There is another thing which I should like to know.
What is it?
The point at which we digressed, for, if I am not mistaken, the exact place was at the question where you would divide the management of herds. To this you appeared rather too ready to answer that there were two species of animals, man being one, and all brutes making up the other.
True.
I thought that in taking away a part, you imagined that the remainder formed a class, because you were able to call them by the common name of brutes.
That again is true.
Suppose now, O most courageous of dialecticians, that some wise and understanding creature, such as a crane is reputed to be, were, in imitation of you, to make a similar division, and set up cranes against all other animals to their own special glorification, at the same time jumbling together all the others, including man, under the appellation of brutes. Here would be the sort of error which we must try to avoid.
How can we be safe?
If we do not divide the whole class of animals, we shall be less likely to fall into that error.
We had better not take the whole.
Yes, there lay the source of error in our former division.
How?
You remember how that part of the art of knowledge which was concerned with command had to do with the rearing of living creatures, I mean, with animals and herds.
Yes.
In that case, there was already implied a division of all animals into tame and wild, those whose nature can be tamed are called tame, and those which cannot be tamed are called wild.
True.
And the political science of which we are in search is, and ever was concerned with tame animals, and is also confined to gregarious animals.
Yes.
But then we ought not to divide, as we did, taking the whole class at once. Neither let us be in too great haste to arrive quickly at the political science, for this mistake has already brought upon us the misfortune of which the proverb speaks.